Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
From the Financial Times, this is Hard Currency. Daniel urges caution. Dennis wants to talk about it. Lael thinks it's too soon. Eric and John say it's possible. And everyone wants to know what Stanley, William and Janet think. Federal Reserve members are once again confounding and confusing the market with a series of speeches and comments that may or may not signal that the central bank will raise rates next week. Isn't it time they changed the way they communicate and follow the policy of others, such as the Swiss National Bank? I'm Roger Blitz, and a warm welcome to Hard Currency, the weekly podcast of the Financial Times on what's been going on this week in the foreign exchange market. We're joined this week with someone with strong views about how central banks communicate and what they should tell the world. And that's Peter Rosenstreich, head of market strategy at the online bank SwissQuote. And as we are talking about the SNB, we're also joined by Ralph Atkins, the FT's Swiss correspondent. Can I start with you, Peter? How have we got to this state of confusion about what the Fed says?
Well, you know, I think around 2007, 2008, during the financial crisis, there was a need or a sense of responsibility to communicate very clearly what the policies of the Fed were doing to sort of support the issues at hand. And I think, you know, Bernanke moved forward with a very transparent communication strategy. And that was relatively embraced at the time, given the complex nature of the situation that they were trying to deal with. And since then, it has evolved to this, you know, ultra transparent, you know, enormous amount of communication. And that trend has sort of gone uninterrupted since then. And here we are now where we are watching Fed policy very carefully.
And very carefully. We're micromanaging.
Yeah. And we have a situation where there's an enormous amount of communication coming out of the Fed at random parts, random times, causing sort of rogue waves of volatility and really disrupting the market. And the situation has probably, in my view, sort of got out of hand. There's been too much communication. These Fed members are not, professional speakers. They often say things that may be nuanced, they didn't quite mean, but it has a very profound effect on volatility and financial markets perspective. So my view and my thinking is that perhaps there should be a pullback of all of this communication.
Okay. Ralph, you follow what the SNB says. They were speaking this morning. What did they communicate?
The most exciting jobs on the FT, I have to say.
Well, how boring was it?
Well, the wording today is pretty much as it's been in the past few press conferences. They are very disciplined, cautious, pretty predictable, except those odd occasions such as January 2015 last year when they suddenly lifted the cap unexpectedly on the Swiss franc. But in normal circumstances, they are very predictable, clean, easy to follow, easy to understand.
And do we get these lots of other SNB members like we have the Fed with
Daniel
and Dennis and Lael all having
basically their... a three-man team, two men, one woman, who make the decisions together. So, and it's a fairly homogenous group of like-minded people thinking. So there isn't certainly no public debate about their course of action.
And how often are they saying and speaking?
They have speeches on regularly. I mean, the Thomas Jordan, the chairman, gave a speech only the other week on education and the importance of education for central banking.
Okay.
They have press conferences twice a year, essentially. I mean, but of course, they can do them at any time if they wanted to. But much less communication than you get from
Peter.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is that if the SNB was slightly less conservative than you expressed, I think the analysts and the market would really want to know what the S&P's prognosis would be, what their solutions might be if, you know, and put all the hypotheticals forward. You know, what happens if the ECB goes more aggressive easing? What happens if there is a, you know, a significant political crisis in Europe and we see the flows of capital into Switzerland? And, you know, and by not setting a precedent where people can ask these questions, or, you know, not giving them a forum to do that, it limits the volatility significantly. So while the policy has been extremely steady, it doesn't necessarily mean that if they opened up the conversation, that it wouldn't inject volatility.
Okay. Well, let's just widen this a bit and see across the central bank universe who gets this also wrong and who gets it a bit more right. The European Central Bank, Mario Draghi, he seemed to have the market in his pocket a few years ago, Ralph. Is he now getting it more wrong than right?
Well, the ECB has, of course, become an increasingly complicated political organisation. It's all embroiled in the whole discussion about the future of the EU post-Brexit, a lot of questions about the future of integration and so on. So, which makes it much more complicated and creates more internal tensions, I'm sure, within the bank. And also, they're doing ever more extraordinary monetary policy measures as well, which breaking the norms and everything. It's understandable, but it does look very messy from the outside. I mean, we praised the SNB earlier, but God, I mean, the SNB has, in a sense, a much easier task.
Yes,
a tiny little Alpine economy that's doing extremely well. So the ECB has a complicated, very divergent economy to manage.
But do you get the sense that Draghi, Peter, has how can I put it, lost the market's confidence, almost in the way that the Bank of Japan has lost market confidence?
I think not specifically Draghi, but I think when you open up significant communication, there is erosion of confidence. And just the other day we heard from Leitenschlager, who came out, you know, sort of against further easing, who said that monetary policy was good and steady and sort of taken away, you know, what we were growing in expectations for further policy action due to the fact that, you know, industrial production has been quite weak in Europe. The German numbers are coming down. So here we have this divergence between what is being said and the data, which is causing significant issues.
So the politics, I mean, Leitenschlager, German, of course.
Right. Everyone has a reason for why they do it. And that's part of the issue. So when we go into hearing an ECB member or a Fed member, they bring their political baggage, their economic baggage, all of that coming into, you know, are they ultra hawkish? Are they hawkish? Are they dovish? Are they old? You know, it's extremely complex where, you know, it almost becomes an unwinnable situation. And it's fine for policy setting, perhaps, but when it gets injected into markets and it creates the volatility, you have real consequences. So, you know, saying that so-and-so is leaning more towards the old Bundesbank style of doing things doesn't necessarily mean that the volatility and the real market pricing movement disappears, but that is actually real.
But to give some defense to the Fed and the members, I mean, look, they are having a debate. They are split. They should reflect that split, shouldn't they? Similarly, ECB has, you know, has lots of divisions across it. I mean, this is serious stuff. It's not just about the process of communication. It's about the content of what they're talking about.
Agreed. And it's not the divergence of opinions that's the issue. It's the the communication of that information. You know, when the S&B puts forward as they did today, the quarterly report, it was a very stable 1.5 pages. Here's the facts. This is what we think. Let's move on. But when you start seeing Fed members on CNBC and you know, and taking questions ad hoc from the audience, you start getting into a quite a slippery slope. And I think that's really where it becomes, you know, difficult, because they're not professional speakers. They have verbal slips. And that has profound consequences within the marketplace. So, you know, I'm not saying that they should all the Fed or the ECB should become like the S&B, but I think there should be a slowing down of some of the communication, and it might benefit everybody significantly.
This is a market which is constantly trying to anticipate what central banks say, and that is presumably creating some distortion in it. Ralph, do you think that, for example, the euro is a reflection of fundamentals or the anticipation of central bank action?
I mean, I think that there is a lot of noise. I think that's it's basically what you're saying, Peter, isn't it? There's a lot of noise in the debate, and I think the sort of the push towards greater communication ultimately creates sort of less clarity rather than more
sure.
clarity.
Who do you think fears each other more? Is it the central bank, Peter? Is it the central bank who fears the markets more, or the markets who fear the central banks more?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's a difficult question, but I think right now the markets are guiding central bank policy more than central banks are guiding the markets. I really think that
markets haven't lost their trust in central bankers. It's been tested, but it's not being lost. That's my impression.
I think the respect is still there. They still drive pricing. That's for sure.
It isn't the fact that markets haven't lost their trust simply because there's nothing else to trust
quite,
out there.
Yes. What do you do? I mean, we really are in a bad way if markets do lose their trust.
Sorry, Peter.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, the trust is there. We saw, I think, the clearest indication of this is the effect of Brexit. And the fact that the soon-to-be potential breakup of the largest economic union in the world barely had more than a 48-hour impact in financial markets because of central bank policy and being a backstop for risk. You know, so you know, I think that's a very strong testament of how strong central banks are right now.
An FX move might be driven by the market or the central bank. It always doesn't matter. It always becomes nullified within a very short space of time. There's such short-termism in this market at the moment.
I mean, I think if you're trading macro in FX and you're not trading bond central banks, I think, you know, if you're looking at fundamentals as a primary determinant of your trading, I think you would have a very difficult time. You look at some of these EM currencies like South Africa, Russia, Brazil, you know, where the fundamentals are just stinky, and yet the appreciation that we've seen has been extremely dramatic, and that's a testament of risk appetite, yield seeking, and central bank action.
Donald Trump says that the Fed is losing its independence. I just want to ask what you think about as the world moves towards a more fiscal easing climate, in which we rely on governments and the politicians to take over some of the heavy lifting from central banks. We will see central banks become much more in lockstep with how governments operate. I take, for example, the Bank of England and Mark Carney with the UK government as it moves towards this duopoly of running a government. To what extent should central banks, do you think, get close to governments and how they operate fiscal easing? Or should they remain aloof and independent?
Well, living in Switzerland and having lived for a long time in Germany, I know very much what the German view on all this would be, which is a sort of the nightmare scenario. Central banks funding governments. They are buying the debt of governments. So they're in hock with the governments. It's undermining the independence of monetary policymaking, and ultimately will be inflationary. I mean, of course, no sign of that at the moment. I mean, so I think there's a lot of people on continental Europe are seriously worried about this.
And should they be worried in the US and in the UK, Peter?
Well, I think, you know, I think worry is one thing. Whether it's a consequence of the direction that we're going is another thing. And you look at Japan and the inability for the BOJ to sustain, a weaker yen and shifting more towards a fiscal driven policy. I think there has to be a greater level of maybe not coordination, but an understanding of what the government is doing, and by taking it into consideration, is that, you know, one step away from coordination. You know, I think you're starting to get very close to that And I think we're going to head more towards that. I recently wrote something about, you know, helicopter money in Switzerland, and everybody said, well, you know, recent SMB members said no helicopter money. But there are events in Switzerland that are definitely creeping towards that, you know, that functionality, you know. So while they don't like the term for it, you know, the funding of government policy is heading, you know, towards us very quickly.
So maybe when it comes to central banks, less is more. Less speaking, less coordination with government, better trust from the market as a result. Maybe.
I think so. I still think that, yeah, that that having a limited communication strategy, where it, not to the depth of having a rule-based quantitative methodology, but, you know, saying, okay, this is what we're looking for. If the data supports it, this is, you know, what we'll do. And eliminating some of the noise, I think, would be extremely beneficial, especially after volatility that we've seen in the last few months in the U.S.
Great discussion. My thanks to Peter Rosenstreich at SwissQuote and my colleague from the FT, Ralph Atkins. And we'll be back next week to discuss next week's Fed meeting and also the Bank of Japan's meeting, and look ahead to the first debate of the presidential candidates to see how markets are responding to the US election. Keep up to date with all the FX news on ft.com/markets. Until next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
It's goodbye.